everything. Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art.
And welcome to Kick Art with Emma and Stephen, proudly brought to you this May by Creative Communities. Kick Arts is Put Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz or find us on Spotify. Tonight's show is pre-recorded, as both Stephen and myself are out of town on Arts Mahi. However, we have three superb interviews, along with some great Kiwi music for New Zealand Music Month, to fill the show. So to kick it off, hot off the back of releasing his single Flowers in Hendo in April, award-winning musician and Aotearoa's neo-soul lover boy Mohi has delivered a second track, Just Kids. Just Kids speaks to the experience of four kids growing up in West Auckland.
We were just kids. We were just kids. She was just a kid. Beautiful and wonderful. She was just a kid. Student on the honor roll, she was just a kid. Smile so pure, life so cold, she was just a kid. She was just a kid, and she was just a kid. Walking home from school today, she was just a kid. Abuser took her power away, she was just a kid. The middle of an alleyway, she was just a kid. She was just a kid. Oh, we were just kids. Bush in the parking lot, we were just kids. Lolly bags and purple stars, we were just kids. Fridays at the footy club, we were just kids. He was just a kid. Touched on since 11 years. He was just a kid. Tried to talk, nobody hears. He was just a kid. Self-medicated drug addict. He was just a kid. He was just a kid. And he was just a kid. Yeah. Brightest of the class today, he was just a kid. Murdered, now the sky is gray, he was just a kid. Time goes on, the pain won't fade, he was just a kid. He was just a kid. Oh, we were just kids. Bush in the parking lot, we were just kids. And we were just a kid. Lollipops and purple stars, we were just kids. Fridays at the footy club, we were just kids. And we were just, we were just kids. And we were just, we were just kids.
The magic of pre-recording, neither of us are actually in the studio this week.
No, it's a bit different not being there.
And our co-hosts were all busy, our fill-ins tonight, so we've pre-recorded tonight's show. Where are you when this goes to air?
I will be on my way somewhere in mid-air, somewhere between Sydney, Singapore, London.
Well, that's just showing off.
I know.
Yeah. I'm in the beautiful sunny Tauranga.
Well, that's still exciting, though.
No plane trip required, but first rehearsal of Juicy Boys would be taking place today.
Fantastic. So yeah, well, I am on my way to the Junior Theatre Festival Europe, which is happening in Birmingham the following weekend, which is our second pre-recorded show. So, yeah, it'll be pretty exciting.
What is the Junior Festival, for people that don't know it? You've mentioned it a few times here, but to think of it now being all the way on the other side of the world.
Yeah, so there are five international festivals, New Zealand being one of them. So it's a festival over a couple of days that brings musical theatre students and teachers together who have produced a MTI, Music Theatre International Broadway Junior show, and they come and they do a 15-minute segment from their show for live adjudication with industry professionals from around the world. They do workshops, acting, singing and dance workshops. They get to do industry panels. So it's a great big weekend of all things Broadway Junior and musical theatre.
That's cool. And what's your involvement in it?
So in New Zealand, I am the producer of the New Zealand Festival, and then because I'm part of the International Whānau, I get to go to the other festivals, and over in Birmingham, I am one of the adjudicators, so I get to give live feedback and adjudicate performances, and I also run a couple of workshops. Usually I run the professional development workshops for teachers, teaching teachers how to do the ins and outs of putting on a show.
That is awesome. Well, because we're in pre-record land, we're going to have to wait a few weeks to catch up and hear how it went.
We will. We will.
So we've got some fantastic guests on tonight. There's still lots happening in the art space. Shall we kick off with our first interview?
We will. Well, Stephen, this next interview was something that I thought sounded really exciting. How cool is it for a regional theatre company from Aotearoa to get the opportunity to travel to the other side of the world to represent New Zealand in a world theatre festival?
Sounds pretty impressive to me. So who have we got?
So I'm pleased to welcome Debs and Deb from Dargaville Little Theatre. Kia ora.
Hi there.
So first of all, let's start with you, Debs. Tell us a little bit, what is Out of Minds all about?
Cool. So Out of Mind is actually it's a collection of stories about sort of the 1950s mental health in New Zealand. So it follows the story of six women and their kind of experiences and journey, what happened to them, you know, and looks at sort of the, different experiences that people who are suffering with mental health went through back in that sort of time in New Zealand.
My goodness. And what was the, what made you decide to write a play about this?
Yeah, well, it's a really interesting one. So we basically, we had a group of friends that we were pretty keen to do something together. And so we were looking at sort of options and so when I was doing some research, because we wanted to write our own one, I couldn't really land on anything. I knew I needed it to be about New Zealand, like some sort of New Zealand stories. And anyway, I was looking and looking and nothing with women really was jumping out in terms of historical accuracy. And then our director, her grandmother, actually, she was a mental health nurse, and she trained at this hospital called Tokonui. It's just in South Waikato. And she sort of said, oh, I think I've got these old textbooks of hers. And so she pulled them out from when she was studying, and it was like a volume of books. And she gave them to me, and they were super interesting. And so when I read them, I was like, oh, this is really interesting to see how far we've come in terms of mental health. And so I started sort of researching it a little bit more. And that's when we decided that's the story that we would settle on. So yeah, so that's why the woman, like the characters are all women, because basically that's who our group of people were that we're wanting to do something together.
Fantastic. And tell us a little bit about the role you play, Debs.
I play one of the patients called Faye. Oh, sorry, was that me or the other Debs?
No, that was you.
You carry on.
Faye, she doesn't have it too easy in the life that she's been involved with in as a patient, she's seen the darker side of how patients can be treated, and she's so she's a I guess a young mother, and her husband wasn't happy with how she was coping after childbirth. So she went to the hospital, and while she was in there, she has stuff happen to her. So she's not one of the bright life stories from that, but
so for both of you, what's it like playing characters who I'm assuming are, as you said, based on real life people?
Yeah, it's pretty emotional actually. So even now, sometimes in rehearsal, and I'm sort of listening to the stories, because the way that it's done is we sort of weave monologues in and out through songs, and so when I'm listening to their monologues, it's not my turn, but I'm just part of it. I sort of get caught a little bit sometimes, and I'm like, oh, that's right, this is real, you know, and it can be quite emotional doing that. It is really interesting, because all the characters are quite different, because I tried to sort of show the scope of experiences, because some there were actually surprisingly some positive experiences. The large majority were quite negative. But it's really really interesting to kind of play that. And so my character is the opposite of the other devs. So my character, she was sort of more of an upper class wealthy person who had just a little bit of a blip, and so she's very supported by family and allowed a lot more freedom within the hospital and things like that. So it's trying to, like, even within that, showing sort of difference of sort of class discrimination, and there was a bit of race discrimination as well. So it's quite interesting playing those characters.
Now, you mentioned music when you said woven in the music. Is this a musical?
It is. It is.
And so who written the music?
So Julianne Parkinson. So she wrote the lyrics and composed the song. So they're all original music. And then how it sort of works is there's a score sort of in behind all our monologues all the way through. And what happens is we have a little section where it's got a theme which is taken from the textbook. And we sort of share the monologues through that. And then one of the characters is highlighted in that little segment, and then they get transported, and we actually sing a song, and the song is a sort of 50s style music, and it's like they're kind of out of body, you know, reality, out of reality, should I say. So it's quite, that's quite fun. So it's not all dark and heavy, because when we switch into these moments where it's like suddenly we're doing, you know, kind of like jazzy, or, you know, sort of like the 50s rock kind of stuff. Yeah, so yeah, it's quite interesting.
That's so cool. Now tell me, you performed this last year as part of the regional Theatre Fest.
No, it was actually back in 2022.
Oh, wow. So
3 years ago,
A couple of years.
So tell us about the journey then, getting it ready for Montreal.
Monaco.
Monaco. We'll get there eventually. We're just creating your next lot of destinations.
Right. Montreal sounds nice. it was pretty funny, because we had actually, so we went to the Theatre Fest, and we achieved really great success there, and sort of ended it on a high, and we thought we'd put it to bed at that point. And then it was about a year later where it was suggested that we should apply to go to this World Festival. And so we're like, oh, okay. So we kind of had to pull it out again. And it was quite interesting, though, because it came back pretty quick. Like, we got together and we started rehearsing again, and we're like, oh, that's right, it's right there. It just needed a bit more refreshing. And so we had to put some bit of, like, a video performance as well as, a write-up and everything. And then we had to wait for about 8 months before we found out if we were going to get selected. So we actually committed to, like, every 6 weeks or so we got together and we just rehearsed it again just to make sure it was still fresh.
That's cool.
So when we were actually accepted, we're like, yay, it's happening now. It wasn't like starting again, you know, we were able to sort of pick it up and run with it in terms of rehearsal. So that's been really helpful, actually.
Yeah.
And so how many of you are travelling over there?
Eight of us? Ten.
There's eight cast, and we had our director, and that's all we had in New Zealand. But we actually decided that just because we're going over to such an unknown environment, we actually need a few more crew. So we've kind of brought on two more who have been involved in the all the way through because they're sort of our partners of some of us. Sort of like, right, you're doing lights now and you're doing backstage. So there's 10 of us all together.
So how have Dargaville gone about fundraising to pay for this? Because it mustn't be a cheap trip to go to the World Theatre Festival.
No, there's been a few bake sales already and raffles. And last night we had a quiz night that one of our cast members and her partner put together and did all this amazing organising. So we had a huge crowd of locals and some from out of town who came over and did this quiz night with us, and so much amazing local support as well, just donations and sponsorship and I think... anything else?
we've been really blown away. So we set up a Give a Little page as well. We were lucky enough to get a spot on 7 Sharp. And after that, it's just been amazing how much support has gone around through the country. So, you know, we've had theatre groups reaching out and saying, you know, can you come perform here? Or we've had some who just given money. And also the town of Dargaville, like, they're super proud. So, because Dargaville's really small, a lot of people in New Zealand don't even know where it is. We've always had a really thriving theatre scene there, and they've always been really supportive. So, they're just, like, the town itself is really chuffed. And so we've had a lot of businesses support us and just a lot of locals who have just been, like, you know, putting money in theatre's bank account. And, yeah, so it's been amazing.
So awesome.
So, Stephen, tonight I'm going to interrupt our interviews every now and then, as it is New Zealand Music Month, and we want to play as much as we can over the month of May. So here is our next Kiwi piece of music, which is The Responders from Christchurch with You Never Run.
Out. Oh no, I've missed my cue again. Could you give me maybe one more try? Oh no, I've
tell us a little bit about your own arts journeys. Like, when did it all sort of start for you that you got involved in this whole theatre world? Debs P, we'll start with you first.
If we go right back, probably back in primary school, there was a couple of years, you know, you just do school productions. And then after that, I don't think I really had much. There was a stage challenge in high school and then nothing. And then I kept coming and watching Dargaville Little Theatre shows and thought, that's great. Could never pluck up enough courage to go to it. One year I went to a workshop that Dargaville Little Theatre had held and I thought, right, I'm going to put my hand up for the next show. And they did A Christmas Carol. One of our director for the show directed that show, and that was my first step back into proper thespian type productions. So from there, then it was Out of Mind, and that's kind of, you know, taking us to Monaco now.
So I'm touring the world. Yeah, just into the arts and touring the world. I love it. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was Out of Mind. Debs's only her second show, so and it was someone else's first show, and we convinced them to go on it because we were like, it's only really short, like Theatre Fest is really short. It won't, you know, it's fine. And it's like, well, no, this is the longest show. Okay.
How many performances do you do in Monaco when you get there?
Two.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All right, Debs, tell us your arts journey. When did it all kick off for you?
Well, I started quite a young age, so my parents were quite involved in the theatre in Dargaville. So I, you know, was doing lots of shows when I was a little kid and through my teenage years. And then, yeah, just always kind of kept my hand in it. Went to uni and probably didn't do too much at that point. But when I moved back to Dargaville, when I was teaching, that's kind of when I got really quite involved and, yeah, got more into sort of directing and writing and things like that. So, yeah, kind of been involved ever since.
How exciting. And are you involved in the current production that either of you involved in the current production that Dargaville Little Theatre have got on?
No, we're not. And actually the ones that in our team who are, that's why they couldn't be here tonight because they've got a rehearsal. So
this was supposed to be my year off from theatre, and then we got accepted to Monaco. that's okay though. It's a great opportunity. So really glad it's happening.
She only came back into it last year and she's already asking for a year off.
I know. It's nice to come. So tell us, can people still support you with your fundraising?
Definitely.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how can people do that?
Our Give a Little page is still live, and we're actually doing a tour coming up. So prior to this, a lot of our energy has gone into sort of, you know, the raffles and the sort of local events and things like that. But, we're off to the first weekend. We come down and perform at Warkworth and then in Tauranga. So, that's pretty cool. So if anyone's in those sort of areas, we'd love to have them along. And you can just get tickets through, I think if you just, what did Erin say? Is it like Out of Mind fundraising tour, something like that? If you Google that, our ticket, which is Humanitex we use. And then we're going up to Kirikiri as well. And then also to Whangarei for a couple of shows there, and some in Dargaville, but those ones are nearly very sold out. So we're here.
Like 12 tickets or something left, I think. So
that's fantastic. Well, we'll make sure that we put up the tour on our events page so that it's there, and we'll also post the Give a Little to our socials. Well, we wish you all the best for your time away, and we would love to hear from you when you come back. Maybe you can check back in with us once you hit back to Aotearoa and tell us how it all went and what was it like being at the World Festival, because I do hear said rumour that in 2026 the World Theatre Festival is actually coming to Wellington, being hosted by Theatre New Zealand. So we've been in talks with Paul Percy about that. So, you know, we would love to hear what it's like over there. So maybe it can give our listeners a bit of a heads up about what it means and what it will look like in New Zealand.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Great. Well, you guys enjoy the rest of your Sunday night, and thank you so much for joining us on Kick Arts, and all the best for your time.
Thank you.
Wow, what an amazing experience to be able to take a show, especially a New Zealand brand new original show, to the other side of the world.
Absolutely. And you know what I love most about that interview was the way the Dargaville community has come together.
Mm.
And I think that's just that, not small town necessarily, but that community base that happens in these smaller towns versus, say, big cities that can all rally behind like that.
Yeah, I quite often look at shows in regions where they are kind of one theatre club for the region in comparison to, I mean, you look it up here in Tamaki Makaurau where we've got something like, I mean, well, there's 12 musical theatre societies within our area, let alone all the play companies, let alone the professionals. Mm. So we're kind of competing for each other's human resources and bums on seats and things. So I suppose when we go out and need help, mm. there's a lot for the community to share their money around, whereas Dargaville's got their one theatre club. So, yeah. Probably in that way makes it a bit easier.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually heading up to check out their latest production soon. So that'll be really nice. I haven't seen something in Dargaville before.
No. Well, speaking of Dargaville, we're going to another small place, semi-small place. It's still in Tamaki, but our next interview is with Titirangi Theatre. But before we go there, I think we need to have a bit of a music break. So here is Anecdote by Park Road.
We are delighted to welcome back, actually I think he needs frequent flyer points because it's within a month that he's returned, a very busy director, Paul, who has just finished One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and is now doing The Cripple of Inishman. Thanks for giving us those names, Paul. So switching from Playhouse Theatre to Titirangi Theatre, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be back. Thank you.
Great to have you here. Now tell us, how did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest go?
It was an incredible production. I have to say that this is probably the one that I am most proud to have directed and put on. It very much lived up to what I was hoping it would be. It was an incredible experience. And on closing night, I've never seen the whole cast cry as they were taking their bows.
Because they'd given so much to those roles.
Yeah. And we had a standing ovation that night as well, a spontaneous one, which is the scattered one, not where everyone gets up out of obligation, but just scattered groups, which was fantastic. And, couldn't be prouder.
Yeah. So to pack that one up, such a big show, and go straight to Titirangi Theatre and into the next one, could ask, are you crazy, or do you just love the next challenge?
If I'm honest, when I said yes to directing Cripple of Inishman, I actually thought I had an 8-week run-in.
Oh, no.
And I didn't quite...
Not an 8-week overlap.
Yeah. I didn't quite realize that in our tech week, we started doing our auditions during the tech week for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And we had to get our callbacks. And so as the show was running, Cuckoo's Nest was running, we should have really been getting into the rehearsals for Inishman. But we couldn't get a full cast of the audition, so we spent an extra sort of week, 10 days, trying to get the rest of the cast in, and then we had an actor drop out, and we had to replace them. So by the time we started, we had 5.5 weeks.
Wow.
But I have to say, the way the rehearsals have been running and the way the line learning is going on, we're actually fitting in time-wise an equivalent of 8 weeks rehearsal, but just by making rehearsals longer and staggering actors' arrivals, we are actually getting through it. But psychologically, it's still 5.5 weeks.
And is it a big cast? How many are in the cast?
It's a cast of 9, which is nice. It's half of my cast in Cuckoo's Nest. And it's a bit easier from a blocking perspective. As a director, I'm finding that quite cool to just relax and not have to worry about trying to move 18 bodies on stage. Mm. And the way Inishman is, most of the scenes have got 3 to 4 actors at any one time, so it's a lot easier to move them around, which helps, considering we're working in a much smaller space as well.
Mm. And what is it actually all about?
So I don't know this one.
I've heard of it before.
Right. You're both familiar with Martin McDonagh's writing, I assume. Mm. So he's got 2 trilogies of plays, and this belongs to one of those trilogies. And The Cripple of Inishman, one thing that's important to say, that all of these plays, the characters are actually interrelated. So you'll hear references to characters in one play that are lead characters in another play.
Okay.
So it's set in one world kind of thing. And this specific play is about Billy Clavin, who has been born with deformities, and he struggles to walk and struggles to use one of his arms. And he's been called Cripple Billy all his life, which is not a particularly nice thing to be referred to, and your entire identity is around being disabled, basically. And what happens is a Hollywood crew, and this is based on a real-life event, when a Hollywood documentary crew came to Inishman to Inishmore, a neighboring island, to film a documentary in the 1930s called The Men of Iran. And it's about fishermen in this island community, Irish fishermen. And so Billy hears of this, and so he gets his way onto a boat to take him over to Inishmore for the filming, hoping that he'd be part of this movie. And what happens is he gets kind of talent scouted while he's there and gets taken off to Hollywood to become a star. And that's kind of where I think where I'll leave it, because I'll be giving more of it away, what happens in the second act.
So tell us, how have you gone about casting someone to play a cripple?
Well, that's a challenge in itself. I would say I was partially hoping that we'd get a member of the disabled community coming in, but unfortunately we didn't have that. We don't want to. We never find out the actual diagnosis as to what is wrong with Billy. It's just a very, very vague references that he's got a crook arm and a crook leg. So rather than trying to create a disability for him, the way we're approaching this character is that he's basically just got joint problems and he requires a crutch to walk. And that's pretty much as far as we're. We're taking it. We want to be very sensitive to the members of the disabled community and not try to assume what someone's illness could be, if it's an illness or a disability.
It is really hard, though, isn't it? Because, you know, we want to be equitable and we want to give opportunities and give a space for diversity.
Yeah.
But I think it's really hard because if people don't come out and audition, how do you – I mean, I know recently – when I was casting 13, and Archie, of course, is on crutches and that, and I did go out to a few places that train disabled actors, but no one put their hand up to do it. Yep. So what do you do?
And, yeah, well, this is something that we ran into with Cuckoo's Nest, actually, because we had the character of Chief. Now, obviously we cannot there is not exactly a supply of real American Indians in New Zealand. But the character is very much an American Indian. So we were incredibly lucky because I don't know what we would have done if we didn't have John Bauer show up to audition. And he's a member of the Fijian community. And, I mean, you really have to, I think, ask the question. It's, you know, at what point is it cultural appropriation? Mm. At what point are you being offensive? Because really, at the end of the day, actors are actors, and you will not always be have available to you the luxury of casting authentically. And I think it needs to be just approached from a sensitivity point of view and done sensitively rather than.
I remember when we did Ghost and we had the issue there around having to cast some specific Latino roles, etc., and Origin copyright holders wrote to the actual writer of the show and said, this is where they're at, this is who auditioned, what's your thoughts, are you happy for them to go ahead because they can't quite match this? And he wrote the most beautiful letter back saying, I absolutely appreciate and acknowledge that you've attempted, you've tried, and I totally trust you've cast the most suitable person for the role who will do the role justice. And I really liked that.
Yeah.
And then he wrote back and said, quite different to Scotland, who are currently trying to cast it with all white Scottish people. And I thought that, you know, you've got to use what you can use. Sure. Yeah, yeah. So well done. What made you decide you wanted to do this show?
I'm a big fan of McDonagh plays. My first play that I directed at Te Tirangi was actually a Skull in Connemara. And that is from one of his other trilogies that includes The Lonesome West and Beauty Queen of Lenain. And I remember doing that play, it kind of fell in my lap and I didn't really read it. I was just asked to direct it and I said, okay, I'll do it. And I read it after I accepted the gig. And it was incredible. And then, seeing, he's very dark humor. It's a very dark play. Both of them are, but It's so beautifully written, and underneath all of that, there's really beautiful characters. McDonagh's really good at writing characters who are not kind people that in any other play would be villains. And effectively, you have a play where there isn't a redeeming feature for any character, but it's the goodness underneath that is in the subtext that really shines through. And that is what really attracts me to Martin McDonagh's work, is that he doesn't try to create heroes. He's not trying to create these beautiful flowery roles. Mm. He just shows the world for what it can be sometimes. It's filled with people who are complicated, have got their own insecurities. On the surface may appear a certain way, but underneath there is this real beauty and kindness that shines through that is not visible on the exterior if you were to run into them on the street. Mm. And it's incredibly funny.
What's the process to direct a Te Rangi Theatre? Did you apply specifically for the show, or do you recommend the show to them to do?
So for the way they do it now, you have to propose a show that you want to do. So I proposed three different shows and said I'll direct any of these three, and they picked Cripple of Inishman. I think, yeah, when I directed for them the first time, I think there was a director dropout or something like that, and I just kind of stepped into it. But yes, you do have to put a proposal in.
I think it's definitely much easier to direct something that you have got a passion for or a want to do. I think it's quite hard sometimes when you get given a show and told, direct this.
Which I do believe happens in some theatre companies where they'll say, these are our shows, and directors submit your proposals for that show. And then you just sort of, you have to find that that passion for a project, I think, if you're doing something like that. But there's also, you know, you can direct for the sake of directing, or you could also see a play or a musical, for instance, that you may have never heard of, but you read the script and synopsis and you go, you know what, that'll be a real challenge and I want to put that on. But I do think that you have to connect with the material on some level.
Now, you mentioned the writing of this can be quite dark, and you've just done One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Are we getting an insight into Paul's world of what he reads and likes, perhaps?
Do you know what? Yeah, all right. I'll go there. I think the Cuckoo's Nest is really heavy material. I don't think it's really that. I wouldn't call it dark, but but I do think Cuckoo's Nest was very heavy. And it's a very emotional show, and it's a very triggering show. With The Cripple of Inishman, it's dark from a point of view of if you like Jimmy Carr's comedy, you'd love this. It's dark from a point of view of it doesn't take itself too seriously.
Right.
It's how people talk in this community. It's not skewed to one specific character. This is just the way that they are, and they joke about things that perhaps shouldn't be joked about. It's quite morbid in places, but it doesn't take itself seriously. But there is a real serious undertone to the message that it's trying to deliver.
Now, this one overlapped. Are you already starting the next one?
I do not have plans for any later in the year to do another one, unless something pops up and I get asked to do something, maybe. But I think that's me for the year. I'm good. I'm good doing two. I'm good doing two.
Because obviously you have a day job.
I do. Yes.
So juggling this is on top of a job. So sometimes, yeah, we do need to put a line in the sand. Yeah. Sometimes, don't we?
Do you know what? I would just be happy to get the weekends back, because this has been, if I think about it, yes, since mid-January, not having a single weekend day where I can just have free. So just get some me time back. That'd be good.
Yeah. Brilliant. Tell us about your team. Who's involved in this production?
We have got Hamish, who plays Billy. We've got a few returning cast members from my previous show. We've got Melissa Hyde and Scott Cutler coming in to play the roles of Aunt Kate and Babby Bobby, who's the boatman who ferries people to Inishmore for the filming. We've got Kate Watson playing Eileen. We have Kate O'Gorman playing Helen. We have Amy Costa, who plays Mammy. And Angus, whose surname just escaped me at the back of my head, who's playing Doctor. And Paul Kershaw returning to Te Rangi to play the role of Johnny Patine Mike, who's the town gossip and amateur newsman. I'm really hoping I have not missed a single character there. Just running through them in my head. Yep, no. I think I got everyone there. We got a total of four Kates. So that's been a challenge when trying to direct. We have the character of Kate, and then we've got the two actress Kates, and then Kate Smeal is producing for me again. And who else? That's the team. Yes, Oliver Ponell playing Bartley. That's right. I forgot. Sorry, Ollie.
Brilliant. And usual kick-ass question. If we hide our microphone in the fabulous bar at Tauranga Theatre, which is always adds to a good night out. What do you hope people will say as they leave?
Not what I expected, but very good.
Okay.
Because I think, unless you're familiar with Martin McDonagh work, I don't know what you would think this play is. I think you might think it's an Irish play similar to Father Ted or some, you know, something like that. But I really don't think most of our audience will know what to expect. But I think it will exceed any expectations that they might have.
Okay, cool.
It's one of those plays that, yeah, unless you're familiar with it, you don't really know what you're in for. And it's terribly funny. And me saying that, I'm not saying I'm just trying to promote it. It's, you know, as a director, when you're sitting in the room and you've rehearsed the same scene like 12 times that day, just getting it perfect, and you still can't stop laughing at every single beat. You know you've got something special, and the actors have really really embraced the material. And as I said, we have a very short rehearsal lead, and we're May 11th, I think we've rehearsed for just two weeks now, and lines are pretty much done.
Fantastic.
And so now they're really getting underneath the skin of the characters, really starting to discover the gold underneath the dialogue. And yeah, like today's rehearsal was fantastic. Just watching it is a real joy. Directing it is a real joy. And I really, really think that will come across in the finished product.
So after you've had your break, rested, and had some weekends back, if a theatre company was to offer you the next script, what's one you'd love to do?
Oh, I've got a list. Can I get it out?
Oh, he's got a list. I've got on his phone. He is organised.
Oh, no.
Producers, listen in.
Here it is. Oh, that's on the wrong one. One second. I'll start at the top. There's another Martin McDonagh play, which is The Lieutenant of Inishmore, which is part of this universe of plays. I'd love to do Amadeus.
Oh.
Amadeus is again, I feel like it's a bit of a challenge. Oh, yeah. Very similar to Cuckoo's Nest for me.
Being a good wardrobe person for that one.
Definitely. talented Mr. Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone brave enough to put on Saved. Producers, please read the synopsis if you are not familiar with that show. Once on Chanuk Beer is one I would love to do. The Graduate. And of course, the list wouldn't be complete without The Iceman Cometh and The View from the Bridge. I think, as a director, those are the lists of plays, is the body of work that I would love to direct. I've got real connections with all of those plays, and it'd be nice to tick them off slowly off my list over the next 5 to 10 years.
Brilliant. Love it. Well, thanks for coming in and chatting to us again, Paul. Where can people go to find out more, get tickets, and do all those important things?
The tickets are on sale through the Titirangi Theatre website. The tickets prices range $15 to $35, $35 for adults, $15 for student scorecard members. Concessions, I believe, are $20, $25. Yeah. But it's all on...
And the dates, show dates?
Show dates, 3rd of June to the 14th of June.
Fantastic.
Matinees on Saturdays and Sundays. Sunday show is at 4 p.m.
And if you're not used to the Titirangi area, there's so many restaurants and cafes you can make a fabulous night out. Go for an early dinner, then head down to the bar and the theatre and make a real night out of it. That's the nice thing with Titirangi.
Yeah, the Hardware Cafe is still there. I've been going there for whenever I do anything at Titirangi. Hardware Cafe is my place to go to have dinner before going into an evening rehearsal or a show. There's the Itty Bar across the road, which is phenomenal. And of course, the Street Eats, which is the part of the new precinct on the corner there, and they've got some fantastic food places in there. There's not really a shortage of eateries and the things you can do before a show.
Brilliant. All right, head along. Thanks so much for checking in again, Paul. Head along to Titirangi Theatre to find out more.
Thank you very much.
that was Indy with Sail Away.
Well, Paul certainly has kept himself busy this year, given we're only in May and he's on his second production.
I know, busy, busy man. And speaking of busy, Stray Theatre Company are busy, as we had them on last week talking about She Kills Monsters. And then this week we've got another group from Stray back to talk about their next production, which is The Glass Menagerie.
Oh, you said that so well. I kind of just didn't get that word right during the interview. Shall we have a listen?
Yeah.
So our next guests are from the fabulous Stray Theatre, who are regulars here on Kick Arts, and is, I guess you describe, the performing arts sort of organisation that sits within all of Auckland's universities. So I'm hoping I'm kind of correct there, and we'll find out, because we welcome Florian and Matthew, who are here to talk about The Glass Menagerie. We're going to let you take that one. Tell us now, Matthew, you've been on here before. You've been part of theatre for a while. Am I right? Is Stray Theatre sort of the makeup of Auckland's unis?
I know its association with Auckland University was its origins. I'm probably not the right person to be asking about the actual...
I think they allow others in, don't they? But yeah.
So I am not associated with the university. I'm not a student. So they definitely allow other people in there.
Ooh, he's a ring-in. He's a ring-in.
Definitely encourage other people to get involved with Stray as well. So it's not just a student company. Anyone's allowed.
Because last time we chatted to it was Romeo and Juliet, is that
indeed
right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So tell us, what is The Glass Menagerie all about?
Well, would you like to take that, Florian?
Ooh, maybe.
That was a nice pass.
What is The Glass Menagerie about? The Glass Menagerie is about the Wingfield family who are living in 1920s.
30s.
30s. I should know that at this point as the director. Living in 1930s St. Louis in the United States of America, midst of the Great Depression, having just a terrible time together. Just being very unhappy with each other and with themselves and with their lives. And the play is sort of about the implosion of that family and that connection.
And what made you want to direct this?
I love when media is upsetting and sad. And I also know the play quite well. I've read it in high school, which was three or four years ago. And I've been thinking about it ever since. So when I was thinking, oh, I kind of want to direct something, this was going to be it, it felt like.
Cool. Okay, and what's your involvement, Matthew?
Within the play?
Yeah.
Well, I am acting as a character named Tom Wingfield, who is the narrator of the play, who is a little bit... not up himself, but a bit of a catalyst as well for the eventual conclusion of the play and how the plot unfurls. But he guides the audience through what they should be feeling almost through his perspective, but also his subjective reality. He's not always going to be seen as a reliable narrator in these points. He may seem that his mother is a bit more annoying than she actually was, and he might give a bit too much attention to his sister, who he actually cares about, might play a bit more of a pass at his dad, who he's actually gone as well. But, yeah, an actor under Florian's direction,
So, Florian, tell us where we are in the rehearsal process at the moment.
We are just about to start full run-throughs. Tomorrow is our first full run-through and scripts down.
And how are you feeling?
I am feeling pretty good about it. We've had some people go scripts down a little bit already. And I think a lot of the people who haven't been going scripts down are like,
Security blanket. Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's pretty good. Is this your first time directing?
Yes.
What's that experience been like?
busy.
Yeah.
That experience has been busy. I'm also not an actor, so it's been a lot. It's been a lot of learning experiences on top of each other. Yeah, but it's been interesting.
So what made you want to take up directing?
I do tech, so that's how I am involved in theatre. Not that I'm hugely involved in theatre. I only started last year. But I just wanted to get more creative control, I suppose, because when you're... I had last year one of Stray's original shows, Stray's original bill called Bravado. I was the sound designer for that, and I got quite a lot of free range. And just that... difficult to go back from getting a little bit more range and creative control.
Okay, so putting you now in a cone of silence, you can't hear a single thing. Matthew, how are they doing directing? First time. No pressure.
Totally, because Florian can't hear me, of course. I struggle to recognise that it is Florian's first time. They're not making as many rookie mistakes as I have worked with many first-time directors over the years. I've worked with plenty of lower and higher skilled directors, and I think Florian is definitely on track to being a higher skilled director. There's, I think, a few things from the actor's perspective that I could pull up, but even then, if I'm going to say anything, it'd be nitpicking. So Florian has done an incredible job, and I can't wait to see how all the crew's going to turn out, because if this is how they're doing with the rest of the show and their crew as their first nature, like...
Yeah, brilliant.
So I'm very, very excited to see how Tech Run's going to be.
So I wonder, Stephen, if this is a good chance to have a wee stop and have a bit of a music break. And this is Lord with What Was That?
A place in the city, a chair and a bed. I cover up all the mirrors, I can't see myself yet. I wear smoke like a wedding veil, make a meal I won't eat. Step out into the street, alone in a sea. It comes over me. Oh, I'm missing you. Yeah, I'm missing you. And all the things we used to do. MDMA in the back garden, blow our pupils up. We kissed for hours straight, well baby, what was that? I remember saying then, this is the best cigarette of my life. Well, I want you just like that. Into your hands, we're in a sandstorm and it knocks me out. I didn't know then that you'd never be enough. Oh, since I was 17, I gave you everything. Now we wake from a dream. Well, baby, what was that? With me when I'm out with my friends, I stare at their painted faces, they talk current affairs. You had to know this was happening, you weren't feeling my heat. When in the light down, baby, so bright, I face reality. I try. Whatever has to pass through me, pass through. But there's a stain. And while I know it might not let me go, MDMA in the back garden, blow our pupils up. We kissed for hours straight. Well, baby, what was that?
Stray Theatre.
So when did you start your arts journey?
Oh, boy. That was when I was a child, when I was in homeschool, and Mum suggested we do a a scene from Star Wars Episode 6, which was Princess Leia and Wicket W. Warwick in the final act. Not the final act, but I remember playing an Ewok as my first role. Plenty of lines to learn, of course. I'm just grunting on the stage, and that really, I just took off from there, and I've been grunting on the stage ever since.
Did you go off and do any studies in this space, or you've just sort of joined local theatre groups?
No, I've had a lot of experience, particularly through the Sheilawin Shakespeare Festival and the University of Otago Sheilawin Shakespeare Festival. I've gone all through that process through the Nationals and through NSSP, the National Secondary Shakespeare Production, and Young Shakespeare Company overseas. So plenty of workshopping with New Zealand industry, as well as brilliant stuff within Shakespeare overseas performing at the Globe. But I haven't done any formal study on it. I'm not going to speak as an authority of formal study because I have no idea. But definitely I'd say if you want to get better at doing theatre, do theatre. Mm. And if you want to start doing theatre, start with community theatre. Start with things like Stray. There's definitely places where you can learn without it being a professional project that you're going to get battered for doing something bad. But when it's Stray, we're actually all able to learn at the same time. And plenty of things I've learned from other people's mistakes and my own. So
brilliant. Yeah. All right, if we swap the cone of silence now, how's your cast going? How are they responding to you being a director for the first time?
I think well, generally. I knew I'd worked, one of my cast members, Casey, I've worked with a lot already. So I did my very first production with her last year, and she was acting in Bravado, and I was directed by her doing tech also last year. So it's very nice to have someone who I know already fairly well as part of the show. And then Matthew, I did a show with last year, but we didn't really know each other at all. And then everyone else, completely new to me. But it is, I think, I did that intentionally. I didn't want to bring in lots of people that I already knew. By and large, I was trying to cast almost everyone, people that I didn't know, just because I thought it would be easier to get to know people as not bringing my preconceptions of people to them, I suppose, and just looking for actors and characters rather than people that I was familiar with already.
Nice. And what would be your biggest, I guess, takeaway or learning so far? If you were to direct again soon, what would you take from this experience and take into your next one?
I should have started taking notes earlier. that's honestly just overwhelmingly the thing. Write everything down. lean on my producers more.
Nice.
Let them send the emails.
Yeah, use the people that are there around you, eh?
Yeah.
If we planted our kick-ass microphone in the foyer of the theatre, what would you hope audiences are saying when they leave?
Hope they'd be very unhappy. I suppose I want people who are familiar with the Glass Menagerie to feel like we're doing something new with it, because I think we are. And I want people who've never seen the show before to maybe just even a little bit how much I love the play, just get that across to them.
Nice. Okay, cool. What's next for you, Matthew? Have you got any other acting gigs lined up for the year?
Oh, well, I will tell you, I have been on a bit of a bender since Romeo and Juliet. I had a hiatus, a theatre bender.
Yeah, yeah,
not,
right.
I didn't just become an alcoholic.
We didn't just roll you in the door here, yeah.
ever since doing An Ideal Husband last year, before that I had maybe a 1.5 to 2 year hiatus from acting, and getting back into it really just kickstarted in me. And the whole year I've been within show after show with Romeo and Juliet, with Stir Fried, with Stray, also doing Halvey Hotspur with another company, and now with Glass Menagerie. And now that that's coming to an end, I'm realizing maybe I should take a little break for at least a month, which is what I say before the next audition notice comes in and we see what happens. But
is there a dream role you'd like to see? Like, if you saw a show out there, you went, oh, that'll keep me on my bender.
A dream role. Oh.
Or dream show.
I do remember in high school, during the COVID time, when that sort of came around, we were doing Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, terribly sorry. And I was cast as the Pharaoh, which I was very, very, very keen for. Imitating Elvis in an Egyptian light would have been fantastic. Andrew Lloyd Webber, musical, completely fantastic. But that eventually got cancelled. So if I could go back and relive that,
I would like to
finish it off. That would be fantastic. If not, probably something within Shakespeare's realm. Just, I love how rich and deep the Shakespearean characters are written. And every time I pick one up, I'm so fantastically happy with how it's left off.
Okay, cool. What about you? Is there a show that would drag you straight into directing again?
I don't know if I'll direct someone else's work again for a while. There's nothing. Oh, I do want to direct Mr. Burns' A Post-Electric Play. I am quite obsessed with that. But I'm writing things, and I would like to direct those.
Okay, cool. What sort of things do you like to write?
At the moment, I like, because I'm nearly 20. And I think I like a lot of very serious theatre and a lot of very serious media, but I don't think I am in a place to write that yet. So I'm just writing a bunch of very silly things about the things that I like. I'm writing very silly things about stand-up comedy most of the time because I love stand-up comedy.
That's cool. When you say, you know, you've got this passion for serious media, what sort of things are we talking?
Just dark and awful, tragic endings, and and just apocalypses and terrible destructions and implosions and things of that nature. Yeah, I just love it when you leave a room and things are upsetting.
Things have a way of turning out so badly.
Yes.
Did you see Seed Theatre's version of Mr. Burns when it was on a couple of years ago?
No, I probably wasn't in Auckland at that time.
Yeah.
It was a very bizarre.
It was.
It's a very bizarre play.
Yeah, it is.
Its three parts.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
All right, where can people head to book tickets, come and support you and find out more?
StrayTheatreCompany.com/tickets.
Excellent. And what dates is it running?
It is on from the 28th to the 31st of May.
At what venue?
At Pitt Street Theatre.
Fantastic.
And all that information is on Kick Arts event page.
And Pitt Street Theatre, of course, is in the middle of all the crazy roadworks at the moment for the train station. So get online. There's some Wilson car parks nearby that you can park. And, of course, down by the YMCA is a good place to pull up and park and wander around the corner because it is a bit chaotic up there at the moment. Mm-hmm. So plan ahead. Well, all the best. Thank you for coming in. Well done on your first production. Congratulations, because, you know, getting that first one under your belt is always the hardest. Lovely to see you again, Matthew, and we'll look forward to finding out what your next adventure might be.
Fantastic.
I'm not prepared to do that.
Well, you're too safe and boring. Just come on! Stop being amazing!
Jack wanted to be a criminal in the wild, wild west where it's typical to run from the sheriff with the money in the backseat.
guess that Indiana Jones was subliminal. His crimes would remain unforgivable. With the blonde, tough romantic in the front seat, she'd say, "Speed up, baby, going too slow. You're driving like my nanny, and she's 90 years old. Don't think about it, lover. We gotta go right now." And he'd say, "Pop your sugar, why you ripping me out? You're talking like you don't know what you're talking about. I'll think about it, lover. Let's get ourselves a now." With the guns on her fingers, feeling with the triggers, feeling much bigger. We could feel all across the land, head on in like a bag of vans in a backyard. All his folks saying that he was helping along. Top of got a bow with the buffers on, coughing out his ass, pretending that he smoked star. She'd say, "Let me bum that, you're so kind to let me share a cigarette. You know it's mine. Don't put on a persona. I like you as you are." He'd say, "Go ahead, take it all from me. I won't be there. Got everything I wanted. You, me, and this car." With the guns on her fingers, feeling with the triggers, feeling much bigger. We could feel.
And that was his latest, Bonnie Clyde.
Well, a great show without us in the studio.
I know, and lots happening still around the country, which is great.
In fact, Stephen, we've got a few bulletins to share. So first of all, the Royal New Zealand Ballet announces a groundbreaking new season of Home, Land and Sea, which is a landmark collaboration with the New Zealand Dance Company. This creative partnership brings together two of New Zealand's premier dance institutions and a bold exploration of national identity, connection to place and our collective future. So at the heart of this world premiere, it's being choreographed by Moss T. Urarangi Patterson, and each piece will feature six dancers from each company, creating a unique artistic dialogue that transcends traditional boundaries. So this work is being done from the 24th of July in Wellington through to the 9th of August in Christchurch. So Wellington, Auckland and Christchurch. And you can find out more through the Royal New Zealand Ballet. Now, Te Pou Theatre and the Dust Palace, in association with PANS, are bringing Te Tangi e Te Tui, which will soar across Aotearoa for a much-anticipated tour, which is being presented in association with the Performing Arts Network of New Zealand. Again, this groundbreaking work brings together the resonance of te reo Māori storytelling with the visceral beauty of circus. It's co-written by Amber Curran and Tainui Tukuiho, and this work fuses kapahaka, acrobatics, and breathtaking aerial artistry to tell a story of reclamation, remembrance, and return. This tour starts in August in Tauranga and travels through Rotorua, Taranaki, Whangarei, and Kerikeri. So again, keep an eye out for this one, either via the Dust Palace or Te Pō Theatre. And a few other things happening here in Tamaki Makaurau. We have The Play That Goes Wrong is on at the ASB Waterfront Theatre from the 14th of May to the 1st of June. The longest running comedy in London. The smash hit Olivia and Tony Award winning The Play That Goes Wrong is here in New Zealand, bringing a hilarious hybrid of Monty Python and Sherlock Holmes. Things go from bad to utterly disastrous. So this is something to look out for. Again, that's at ASB Waterfront Theatre. I didn't invite you here to lecture me from Art Sense Productions is happening from the 21st of May to the 24th of May at Q Theatre. So this comes from the 2024 New Zealand International Comedy Festival hit, HR the Musical, and this is a solo verbatim comedy set in a lecture theatre. A few weeks back, it's not to be missed. The Matariki Glow Show. The Glow Show brings a beautiful Matariki mist to life with its unique puppets, intriguing tamariki wherever it goes. Now that is happening at the Glen Eden Playhouse on the 4th of June. As we said, so much happening. And if you're not already getting it, make sure you subscribe to the Auckland Theatre List if you're here in Auckland, which comes out each Sunday, and you'll see everything that's happening in Tamaki Makaurau.
Speaking of around the country, of course, with our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz or find us on Spotify, that means anyone from around the country can come on our show.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, we've got an interview coming up in a couple of weeks from all the way down from Queenstown. And then next week, on our second pre-record, we're actually doing a special episode all about studying performing arts, both here in New Zealand, Aotearoa, and also in Australia, and talking to 10 people that are away studying at the moment. So that will be a great episode for anyone looking at maybe going to study in the future.
Because auditions come up pretty early in the year. You've got to sort of start that process.
Yeah, most of them start in the June. Some of them are later, but you want to be collating the wins and the cutoffs and what's required so that you can start preparing.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so that's next week. Catch up with them. And, of course, if you've got something anywhere coming up, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. Plus, we're coming into the winter months, so maybe if you've read a good book or there's some great music or something to share, let us know, because it's that time of the year that you might curl up by the fireplace reading a book.
Yeah, hunker down for winter, definitely. So we're still away for another week or so, but obviously checking our emails all the time, keen to hear from you. Also keen for a couple more sponsors to fill out our year. If you've got something coming up and you'd like to help keep us on air, it could be a one-off donation, or you might like to sponsor the month.
Absolutely. Flick us a message, info@kickarts.org.nz. Emma's in charge of the music tonight.
So I'm going to play you out with a couple of New Zealand music tracks. First up, Miranda Easton, When I Dream, to be followed by Marshmallow featuring Claudia Robin Gunn and their latest track, Dandelion.
Have a fabulous week and make sure you
kick some arts.
Thoughts like leaves caught up, down precious love that you once lived. Shadows waiting patiently in the back rooms of my mind. Drift through open doorways, fragile specters of those left behind. Lights are fading softly while the years slip away. I can hear.
brush your teeth, and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Good night from Kick Arts. Kick Arts.
There are Citizens Advice Bureau throughout the Auckland region. If you have a problem, give your local Citizens Advice Bureau...